Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 10th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Evacuation zones greatly reduced for Spokane fires yesterday. Malden evacuated over the weekend as two wildfires in northern Whitman County burned structures. Top wildfire and land management officials at Wildfire Confab in Coeur d'Alene and Moscow School Board must decide by the end of the month which of an array of projects to put on the ballot this November, bond or levy. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Federal and state wildfire officials were in Coeur d'Alene Friday for an interagency fire cachet in which U.S. Forest Service Chief Tom Schultz said historically low snowpack and drought conditions are widespread across all the western states. Schultz, who is a former Idaho Timber Company executive and who works for an administration whose position is climate change is a hoax, noted the number of acres burned this year exceeds the 10-year average for wildfires up to this point in the season by 144%. In the past 10 years, the average number of acres burned at this point was 4 million acres. So far this year, 5.76 million acres have burned. Schultz also said the number of fires at this point in the season is 127% of the 10-year average at this time of year. In the past 10 years, the U.S. has averaged 35,000 wildfires at this point in August, but this year there have been 44,450 wildfires so far. The Idaho Press reported, speaking of the western states, Schultz said, many of those states have had somewhere between 0 and 15% of snowpack that they would traditionally get, so we knew these conditions are going to be difficult. Schultz said the three wildfires burning in and around Spokane are the nation's number one priority. He said the Coeur d'Alene tanker base has loaded 740,000 gallons of fire retardant this year, of which more than half have been delivered to Washington. Idaho Department of Land's Fire Management Bureau Chief Josh Harvey was at the cachet and press conference Friday. Harvey's agency issued a report which said as of Friday, 485,550 acres have burned across all jurisdictions in Idaho so far this year. That's exceeded by a single wildfire, the 550,000-acre Big Grass Fire, which originated in eastern Oregon but has burned across the Idaho state line into Owyhee County. Governor Brad Little made an emergency declaration about the fire July 28th, which unlocked Idaho National Guard personnel and aviation resources to fight the blaze. Harvey said 4,480 acres of Idaho Department of Lands parcels have burned around the state so far this year, totaling 149 fires. He said of those, 81 were human-caused, 29 were natural, and 39 were of undetermined causes. He said the Idaho Department of Lands has spent $23.3 million on firefighting so far this year, of which $6.5 million is reimbursable from other agencies whose lands the fires were burning on. Harvey also relayed some national statistics, saying 31,000 firefighters are currently fighting blazes, most of them in western states. There are 625 hand crews, 1,897 engines, and 186 helicopters deployed. He said those numbers demonstrate the level of competition any fire is going to be competing for resources across the country. Idaho is prepared and continues to coordinate available resources, but crews, engines, aircraft, and incident management personnel are in very high demand. 250 fire management specialists from Australia and New Zealand are scheduled to arrive in the U.S. Tuesday or Wednesday. Fire officials greatly reduced the evacuation zones for the three Spokane area fires yesterday, allowing thousands of people to return to their mostly unscathed homes outside of the fire perimeters, but which had previously been under mandatory evacuation orders. The areas are now downgraded to level one get ready orders. The Old Trails fire, which has burned 3,176 acres, mostly within the Spokane city limits, and destroyed more than 800 structures, is 43% contained. The Autumn Lane fire in Spokane County and southeastern Stevens County has burned 5,781 acres and is 61% contained. And the Fairview fire, just outside the northeast Spokane city limits, has burned 1,056 acres and is 43% contained. All three fires destroyed a significant number of structures and are still burning. There are still level 3 mandatory evacuation zones in effect where the fires are still burning in and near Spokane.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Unga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Unga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Fire officials ordered the town of Malden in northern Whitman County evacuated Saturday afternoon as winds pushed a wildfire towards the town of about 300 people that was essentially destroyed by a previous wildfire on Labor Day 2020. The Babb Road fire burned 90% of the structures in Malden and in neighboring Pine City in northern Whitman County in 2020. This past Saturday, crews were able to keep the Wells Road fire to about 2,000 acres Sunday night, but the fire destroyed four structures. According to the Lewiston Tribune, it's unclear whether the buildings were homes or outbuildings. However, the Spokesman Review reported the fire burned at least one home on John Ty Road, as well as outpost farm buildings. Another wildfire Saturday afternoon caused the Level 3 evacuation east of Colfax. The 600-acre Palouse River fire destroyed two structures. No injuries were reported in either fire. Washington Department of Natural Resources Public Information Officer Bethany Osgood said both fires in northern Whitman County were 0% contained as of last night. The Palouse River fire east of Colfax blackened wheat fields along the South Palouse Road. The fire also melted parts of the Palouse River and Cooley City Railway that runs along the road, and one Facebook post apparently showed a rail trestle over the Palouse River engulfed in flames. The Whitman County Sheriff's Facebook page reported officials had downgraded the Level 3 evacuation order for State Route 272 to Parvin Road near Colfax to a Level 2 Get Set order. The three Spokane complex fires, which raced through the city of Spokane and outside the city limits August 1st, destroyed or damaged up to 900 structures, many of them single-family homes. Some structures survived. The Spokesman Review listed institutional buildings and businesses that survived and those that were destroyed in Northwest Spokane's Indian Trail neighborhood and Five Mile neighborhood. The fire destroyed Riverside Real Life Church on 9 Mile Road and the Spokane Rifle Club, which was in the path when the fire jumped the Spokane River into Riverside State Park August 1st. The Dwight Merkle Sports Complex survived with some damage. The Avista Senior Living Complex and the Brookdale 9 Mile Alzheimer's and Dementia Care Center survived, while all other buildings around it burnt to the ground. The Sunset Chapel and Mausoleum at Fairmount Memorial Park survived the fire, but there was substantial damage to the park's maintenance building. The Nom Nom gas station survived the fire. The Excelsior Mental Health Wellness Center on Indian Trail Road survived the fire, as did the Indian Trail Elementary School and the Spokane Public Library Indian Trail Branch. The Lilac Learning Center Private Special Education School on 9 Mile Road survived the fire, as did the New Horizons Community Church on Lincoln Road and the Providence Adult Family Home on West Strong Road. Moscow School District Superintendent Sean Teagues laid out options for new school construction or renovation at a school board informational meeting Friday morning. The school board is expected to vote to put a bond or a levy on the November ballot at its Wednesday, August 26th meeting. Teagues laid out a $56 million project that would include moving Moscow High School to the current middle school building on D Street, which would be renovated with a new career technical education space, a new performing arts space, and new athletic facilities, and possibly a new HVAC system. Teague said that would extend the life of the building for another 80 years and save the district $100 million that it would cost to build a completely new high school. However, that would mean the district would have to construct a new middle school, which could be placed at Olier Field on Mountain View Road, costing about $67 million. Another option would be a new elementary school on city-owned land on West Palouse River Drive for $26 million. That school would replace West Park Elementary School, which district officials say is deficient and not walkable for most young students. According to the Daily News, Teagues also presented other possible projects, such as converting the old Russell Elementary School in the Fort Russell neighborhood into the new district offices, with the current district offices on Cleveland Street becoming a CTE space focused on medical professions. That project would cost $6 million. An HVAC system upgrade at Lena Whitmore Elementary School would cost $3 million. Under state law, a bond election would require a two-thirds supermajority vote of district residents, but the money, likely to be $100 million, would be paid off over the long term, up to 30 years. By contrast, under Idaho law, a plant facilities levy would only need a 55% or 60% supermajority in order to pass, depending on the amount of money requested. According to the Daily News account of the board meeting, board member Brian Kennedy said he was concerned about running a plant facility levy because it would stretch out construction over a number of years. Teagues said under a levy, the district would acquire the money for construction from taxpayers each year in increments for up to 10 years, making construction cost inflation a greater concern with that method of funding. Because of the larger supermajority required for bonds under Idaho law, it's been several years since a school district in the state has passed a bond. Board member Jim Fresnel said, "My personal feeling is there's no way a bond will pass." Fresnel and fellow board member Ken Fonts said they are confident school district voters would pass a plant facilities levy, which had a 60% majority requirement.
Idaho's transgender bathroom ban could see more court action this month after a federal judge blocked portions of the law in June. Idaho's Attorney General is appealing the judge's preliminary injunction, a ruling that allows trans people to use single-user bathrooms that match their gender identity and multi-user bathrooms when a single-user one isn't available. ACLU of Idaho staff attorney Emily Croston says the lawsuit in the case is still proceeding in district court.
We are fighting to continue litigating the bill in the district court to get a final decision on the merits that this violates Idahoans' constitutional rights and for an eventual permanent order that would block enforcement as to all restrooms in Idaho.
The Attorney General has a scheduled August 28th deadline to file his appeal brief with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The state legislature passed the law this spring. Six transgender Idahoans filed suit, saying the ban violates their constitutional rights to due process, equal rights, and privacy. If it stands, the ban would make it a crime to use a bathroom that doesn't match a person's assigned sex at birth. Supporters say it protects women and children and keeps private spaces safe. Violators could face up to 1 year in prison for a first offense and up to 5 years for a second offense. Opponents have repeatedly stressed it's unclear how the law would be enforced. The Idaho Fraternal Order of Police and the Idaho Chiefs Police Association oppose the bill, saying there isn't a reasonable way officers could verify a person's sex without inappropriate or invasive searches. Croston says access to public bathrooms is a crucial part of participating in public life.
Folks can go to a restaurant and use the restroom or shop at a mall and they're out for a long time to use the restroom. So this bill is really impacting the way that Idahoans are allowed to exist in public.
Idaho, along with 18 other states, has a law restricting which bathrooms trans people can use in public schools and public buildings. Idaho's ban is the only one that extends to private businesses. I'm Laura Hatch, Northern Rockies News Service.
November's ballot description of Initiative 645 will state that if passed, the measure will cut funding for education and human services. The required 10 to 15 word public investment impact disclosure, known as a PID, is placed just below the ballot title and written by the state attorney general. Andrew Villeneuve of the Northwest Progressive Institute says the PID helps voters understand how a measure will impact state spending.
Once they're told how the services are affected, it changes how they think about the measure. Because now they have a balanced look at it. And with that balanced look, they can make a decision that's far more informed than they would have made otherwise.
Hedge fund manager Brian Haywood is bankrolling the measure to repeal the millionaire's tax, which would levy a nearly 10% tax on individual income over $1 million. Haywood's group, Let's Go Washington, argued in court that since the tax won't start generating revenue until 2029, language stating it would impact the current budget is misleading. But Villeneuve counters that biennial state budgets are also required by law to include a four-year fiscal outlook. He adds that the Office of Financial Management has found the state will lose over $11 billion in projected revenue over 5 years if 645 is implemented.
This is a revenue source that we adopted to support our future needs, and the current state budget will be affected if we get rid of that revenue.
Villeneuve explains that before PIDs, which were first used in 2024, Washington state initiative descriptions often promised lower taxes or fees without explaining the resulting cuts to public services like healthcare and education. He says PIDs also alert voters to the existence of a fiscal impact statement in the voter's pamphlet. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
It's been more than a month since Montana rolled out new Medicaid work requirements, and budget experts say they don't know much about how it's going so far. On July 1st, Montana started requiring Medicaid enrollees to work 80 hours a month, attend school or training, or qualify for an exemption. Heather O'Loughlin is with the Montana Budget and Policy Center, a nonpartisan nonprofit group focused on how policies can help low and moderate income earners in the state. She says Montana's health department hasn't released updated information.
The state has not yet reported publicly how many individuals have received notification, how many have been determined in compliance or exempt through ex parte data, or how many Montanans they believe to be out of compliance.
Ex parte data refers to information the health department already has from case files and other resources to determine eligibility. Medicaid's community engagement requirements, more commonly called work requirements, were part of the Republicans' H.R. 1 budget bill passed in July 2025. The health department says the changes will help enrollees rely less on the government and increase personal responsibility. Montana is the second state to start the requirements early. Nebraska began enforcing them on May 1st. O'Loughlin says Medicaid advocates are still concerned about the state's capacity to verify compliance with the new rules. Montana's health department has said it's hiring 59 new employees to handle the workload. Even so, O'Loughlin says many Medicare recipients are worried and confused.
These are workers and caregivers across our state, and some facing serious medical conditions that have relied on Medicaid coverage to access treatment, prescription drugs, and preventative care.
O'Loughlin says letters the health department sent in June added to the confusion, with recipients thinking they needed to prove compliance within 30 days, even though their redetermination date was months away. The state has a three-month hold harmless period where people won't lose their Medicaid coverage for noncompliance as long as they meet all other eligibility standards. That ends September 30th, and after that, people could lose coverage if they aren't following the rules. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
With the money being spent by the federal government on mass deportations, Oregon could hire 9,500 teachers or more than 6,000 nurses. A new calculator released by the Economic Policy Institute will figure the cost of the Trump administration's mass deportation campaign in any state, county, or city, along with the equivalent value of various social services. It shows deportations have cost $3 billion in Oregon. Gordon Lafer with the University of Oregon and the EPI says it is shocking to see such a high price tag while so many people are struggling to pay for things like food, housing, and health insurance.
We wanted to show what the trade-off is so that people understand we could be having all these things that really matter in people's lives, and instead the money's being wasted on this political circus of mass deportations.
The calculator shows with that money, Oregon could fund medical care for 47,000 veterans. The Trump administration says deportations will restore economic stability and improve public safety. But Lafer argues deportations are not making the country safer. He points to data from the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute, showing just 5% of people booked into U.S. Immigration and Custom Enforcement custody have a violent criminal conviction, while the vast majority had no criminal record at all.
This is really not a Republican versus Democratic issue. If you ask almost anybody, would it be better to spend the money on having smaller class sizes for our kids or having more affordable health insurance? That almost everybody would say yes.
In total, the Trump administration has spent about $270 billion on deportations. Lafer says that number is hard to visualize on a national scale, but the calculator allows people to scale it to the size of where they live. He says the results can be more dramatic for small towns.
If you live in a small place and you say, oh, we could have 10 extra school teachers, and everybody who has a kid in school can imagine what that would mean for their kid.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. The National Weather Service has an air quality alert in effect for eastern Washington and central Washington as well as north central Idaho, a different air quality alert. The air quality alert for eastern Washington says particulate matter may reach very unhealthy levels for areas directly downwind from active wildfires. Other areas may reach unhealthy for sensitive groups or worse. Intermittent clearing may occur due to windy conditions, but smoke production continues to be significant. The air quality alert's in effect until further notice due to current and expected smoke from regional wildfires. When air quality is unhealthy, everyone should reduce exposure, limit time outside, avoid strenuous outdoor activity, and follow tips for cleaner indoor air. When air quality is very unhealthy, everyone should reduce exposure, stay inside, and filter indoor air to keep it cleaner. Go elsewhere for cleaner air if needed. Forecast for the Moscow Pullman area. Patchy smoke after 1 a.m., mostly clear, low 48 tonight. Tomorrow, areas of smoke before 8 a.m., sunny, high 85. Mostly clear Tuesday night, low 48, and mostly clear Wednesday through Friday, with highs around 84 and lows around 47. Currently, 82 degrees. Idaho Department of Environmental Quality real-time air monitoring shows the air quality in Moscow and almost all of north central Idaho is moderate at this hour. It's unhealthy for sensitive groups in Lapway and Cottonwood. Excuse me, Rubens and Cottonwood. Moderate in Lapway. And the Washington Department of Ecology real-time air monitoring shows the air quality at this hour in Pullman, Clarkston, and Spokane is moderate, but there's a lot of smoke further west in eastern Washington with quite a number of unhealthy readings at this hour and a very unhealthy reading in Chelan. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is up next. Music begins with Spotlight with Bext at 7:30. Chia Pets on 9 to 11 playing music for you. And Nardwuar the Human Serviettes on at 11. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.